Listen to this.
Zakawani, the flying winger.
Here's Brad Evans.
It's Steve.
Who is it? It's Brad Evans.
It's not again.
Happy days are here again. Turning with a drive, it's Steve Zakawani. Evans with the left foot. He's an attacking threat, Brad Evans.
This is so weird.
The party has started.
Hey, what's up, everyone? We are delighted to be joined. I don't even know your official title. I want to say the general manager, but I feel like it's more than that.
It's too long.
What is it?
It's too long. Chief soccer officer and general manager. It confuses me. I don't even know what that part all means.
I have no idea. Yeah.
But we're delighted to have you on, Craig. We'll get right to it. So let's give just a big overview for the season. The team came out flying. I think there was those two early home results. I mean, flying. And then it's been a bit up and down, but I have the table in front of me now. I mean, we're sitting in fourth. We're very much in the running for first place in Western Conference to end the season. We're pretty decent buffer with the red line for the playoffs. We haven't been able to put out the strongest lineup, I would say, at almost any point this season. Someone's always missing. There's an injury here. There's a national team call up there. You're, you know, in the trenches with the guys, you know, helping to build this. From a bird's eye view, how are you sort of assessing the season? 24 games in, only 10 games to go.
I should have expected that question first. I don't mind where we're at. Yeah. I don't like where we're at, but I don't mind where we're at for a lot of the factors you put in there. You know, even those first five games, we didn't have Raul.
Yeah.
So, you know, we really still haven't seen the full selection for the coaches to choose from. And I think we're going to get there here in the next couple weeks. You know, this weekend may be a challenge with Jordan's midweek travel we need to evaluate on his way home. But we're finally getting to a point where we can answer some of those questions. And that's the toughest part as the GM is, you know, how long do I repeat and repeat and repeat before I'm the crazy person that's saying, hey, this roster is really talented. You know, we just need it all to be, we just need everyone healthy at the same time. It's no big deal. Well, you know, we're dang near in August and we will be in August before an MLS game comes. And so, it's been challenging. It's been challenging from a front office perspective. It's been challenging to the coaches because, you know, my job is to build the roster and the coach's job is to coach the roster. And I feel bad when they don't have full selection, but, at the same time, I really think they've done a good job this year of getting us to a position right now, like you said, fourth place, 10 games to play, very much in control of our own fate in a lot of ways. Maybe not in terms of first place. Yeah. You know, we're going to have to rely on some other results, but very much in charge of our own fate in terms of finishing with a top spot and getting some home games in the postseason. And, you know, credit to them, credit to the players that have been here and available. And I had a conversation with Brian last week. I said, I can't wait till everyone's healthy. And the hard choices are yours to make, not mine.
Yeah. That's what I saw him walk off the field, and I was thinking the same thing, that these big decisions are coming up for him. Probably ones that this is probably the biggest moment in his career where he's had to make probably the biggest decisions for the best players to get on the field. And we all don't envy that one, but that's why he's there. And he's not there just to coach, but he's there to manage, right, at the end of the day.
Yeah. Which one of those is the bigger bigger challenge? And I think at different times of the year, I think throughout this season so far, it's not necessarily been the management piece. It's been the coaching piece. And we'll see a shift, hopefully, when everyone's healthy. But I've joked with Brian a ton of times and the entire coaching staff. You know, if they tell me they have tough decisions to make, I'm not going to apologize. That's literally my job is to give them tough decisions. And to Steve's point earlier, you know, now that we're starting to get healthy, maybe there will be some. And, you know, I think that elevates performance. You guys played and you guys know what it's like when you're looking across and you know you might not be the name on the board. It changes your daily approach.
Yeah. You know, you spoke recently, you know, to the press and, you know, everyone wants to know who we're going to sign. We're going to sign people. Everyone's looking around, obviously. Messi's come to MLS and everybody, you know, is looking, you know, what would the Sounders do? I mean, you were quite clear that, you know, we may not be bringing anybody. So can you elaborate a bit more on the thinking behind that? Is it a case of we're happy with what we have or there's just nothing out there that's going to improve us or we'll only make a move if it makes absolute sense?
Yeah, I think the last one is the big one. Yeah. With the champions, with the World Club Championship being this year, we really went out and we made it in. We had a focus on making sure we were solid in January, mm-hmm. not just kind of coasting into that and going, well, let's see what happens and then we'll figure it out. You know, at this point, when we talk about the roster, and this is the hypothetical world that gets dangerous to live in, but if we had the right five goals with the insane amount of scoring chances we've had this year, you know, we may be sitting a little bit better than we are. And if we were, would we be having the conversation where we say we're all right? The first five games, I think everyone felt really good, you know, and really solid about the group. And we knew there were other pieces coming back. So I still think we have elite level performances in us. Mm-hmm. I think right now the thing that's been missing and it's clear as day is elite level finishing.
Yeah. Yep.
And right now, you know, in my chair, call a spade a spade. Mm-hmm. The guys we're paying to win us games need to go win us games because everyone's doing their job to create the chances, to prevent goals going in. Our goals against is really good.
Yeah,
it's at a high standard. And now the guys we pay to win need to go win us games. I was a role-playing defender my entire career, and I was never the guy they looked at when it was 0-0 and say, hey, Weibel, go solve the problem, you know? It's someone in the front half of the field's got to take this by the horns, and that competition we're referencing for position it'll separate itself. Yeah. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah. After the game and post game, Jackson and I were talking, and I said I don't think we're playing bad. We're not playing bad. If you look at every single stat, the one thing that is missing is finishing. And someone came back and posted all this stuff about, what do you mean we're not playing bad? We're not winning games. We're not doing this right. We're not doing that right. And I still think that we're still playing good. And as a player, when I look at us, I don't think that we're playing bad soccer. It's not Inter Miami where you watch and you're like, there's no rhyme or reason. It's not, you know, some of the teams that are bottom dwellers. And so, like you said, who is that guy in your mind in the last 10 games that must grab this team by the neck and say, okay, I'm going to lead this team? In my mind, I'll give you who I think it is. I think it has to be Albert. If he's going to play the 10, then he needs to be the guy that says, I need to up my game. And if I'm going to be there, this is now my team. And if he sees himself here for the future, then he has to have that mentality and say, Nico's there, but if I'm thrust into this role from here on out, like, this is now my team. And I think he has to have that attitude to the guys on the field.
Yeah, I think, I think there's two positions. If you go around the world, there's two positions on every team that separate a lot of performance factors. And they're the 9 and the 10, the attacking mid and the striker. And those are the two positions for us. You know, Raul got to put the ball in the net. Yeah. He knows it. Yeah. It's not like he doesn't know that. He's done it for his whole life. So he's just got to start doing it again. And when a Bear comes on the field, when Jordan gets thrust up there into that position, like, they have to take that responsibility on as well. I'd say by position, the attacking mid and the 9, if we're going to do something special here in the last 10 games and through the playoffs, those two positions have to produce and influence every single game from here on out in a really impactful way. Mm-hmm. Having said that, we've created chances. Even last weekend, we created 3-4 chances. Jordan's header from 4 or 5 yards, good save by the goalkeeper. Christian has one off the post, the forced own goal. You know, you can talk about the what ifs, but at the end of the day, look, man, the 9 and the 10 for us, that tells us where we are at the end of this year. And to be honest, it guides my decisions when we get to the offseason. Mm. Yeah.
No, I think that's fair. And I think, this club in recent years owes a lot to Nico Lodero and to
Absolutely.
Raul Diaz. I mean, they've done amazing things. I think we're all aware of that. But to Brad's point, I think that, you know, there have been other guys who maybe need to step up as well. One guy who has been firing, in my opinion, very good, probably the most, still a bit rough around the edges for me, but super effective, is Leo Chu. How have you seen sort of his development come along this year? Because last year, I mean, he could barely get on the field. And now, we're saying about big decisions, it's when Jordan comes back. I mean, listen, Schmetz, good luck. Like, how can you sit Chu right now? He's so effective right now. So how have you seen him sort of come along? And is there anything that has changed? Is it his off-the-field life is more settled? I'm trying to figure out why he looks so much better, where every game he's killing the right back and it looks like this guy's going to make something happen.
And has made things happen.
Really good.
Yeah, look, you know, I think Leo made a lot of decisions this offseason in terms of his personal life, his mental approach. He is made great strides in his assimilation into, from a cultural standpoint. You know, I think it took him a year and a half to feel like he actually lived here and this was home. And as we all know, like, we've all moved, you know, and it's not easy to just transplant yourself. And especially if you don't think it's forever and stability comes in, but you know, he got married last year and I think just that stability in life and that mentality helped him come back with a little more focus. I think our staff's done a good job working with him, doing video and a little bit of individual work. But I always go back to the player. I mean, the player deserves all the credit, and they're the ones that perform or don't perform, and they're the ones we are critical about or positive about. And so you have to give most of the credit to Leo for coming with a good attitude and a good mentality, because the last 18 months prior to this season, there would have been a lot more people that said, I get it that he didn't work out. Right. But credit to him, because he does look dangerous. You can see it. It's fun knowing the game well enough that when he gets the ball on his left foot and you see the right back just go into body posture panic mode, which was a familiar thing for me in my career playing against guys like you. You know, these are moments that we can't overlook. And again, it's nice to have players like him, like Obed, like Josh, like Jackson, so many of our young guys, and I'm missing, you know, Dylan, Ethan, Danny, all these guys that play and contribute on a consistent basis. And so, Leo's definitely stepped into a world where I think the expectations are not quite high on him as well.
Expectations, 10 games left,
10 games. Yep.
Four on the road or four at home, six on the road. So realistic when you're going into those meetings, and I know that that's got to be a numbers game through everyone. Yeah, yeah. Like what are you guys thinking? Must wins at home, obviously. And then, you know, talk about the final six, you know, road games of the season.
You've got the four home games that, you know, for a multitude of reasons are must win. But realistically, we started the year out and really looked like we were going to reinvent and you know, kind of an impenetrable place here. And then we faltered a little bit due to a lot of different factors. So we've got to reestablish that, especially if we're going to host a game in the postseason. We can't have someone coming in here thinking they have a chance. You'd rather have them defeated before kickoff. And then the road games, we know we can win on the road. I think one of the things we need to also teach ourselves over the late part of this season is it's okay to not lose on the road. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of teams that come in here, and we've seen it now for 2 years straight. I mean, including our last home match, where teams don't even come here to play. No. They just sit in and we have to break them down. And, you know, we did really well against Dallas to get the goal that would have forced them to open up. But then we have one defensive lapse in the half, and it allows them to pack it in. And so I think we have to be willing to do that on the road as well, is go in and just grab a point down the stretch here and solve that riddle a bit as well. And I think defensively we're fine. Yeah. The other thing I you know, we don't get shut out a ton. Doesn't mean we don't get shut out. It is still soccer, but now that we're trending towards a fully healthy squad, I think we're going to be a really difficult team to keep it zero, unless you commit to not attacking like teams do here. Yeah. So, you know, down the stretch, win the home games, focus on the road of seriously not conceding, which Brian touched on in his post game after the last one. Yeah. And at the end of the day, like, our big players have to be big. Mm-hmm. It's that simple. I hate to use these overused phrases, but, you know, it's the time of the year where we find out if our big players are as big as we think.
No, that's absolutely true. And obviously 10 MLS games, but, and you'll know this better than any of us in this room, every club in the world that wants to be a big club is managing more than one competition, right? So you know, we started the season with the Champions League and also the Club World Cup. I don't even know what it's called at this point. But Leagues Cup, MLS Cup, you've had the Open Cup. Every club has to decide what they prioritize. I get the feeling here that we are going to take the Leagues Cup seriously. It's not going to be a case of, okay, play the kids, give the veterans time off. It's a trophy on the line. I get that feeling. How do you and Brian and the staff, how do you guys approach this in the offseason? Do you guys, is it number one, MLS Cup, number two? Do you guys do it that way, or is it sort of, let's go for all of it?
Well, we start the year the same.
Yeah.
We're going for all of them. And then situationally, like, I mean, this year when we got to the Open Cup, for instance, we were down four or five guys from our starting 11, so it had to change the strategy without giving the lineup away. Like, this, the Leagues Cup is the one trophy on this continent we don't own. And so, you know, we'd like to. We don't shy away from saying things like that here. So we're going to take it seriously, and we'll figure it out as we go, because this competition's new, and the cadence of every 3 to 4 days once you get into those elimination games. I think with the games not having overtime or the 30-minute extra, is it makes it a different competition, which will be a little more fun for the coaching staffs, because they don't have to coach against potential 30 extra minutes and then another game in 3 days. So I think tactically that changes this competition from all the other ones that we've been in. And I'm excited for it. I mean, I can't lie. Like, I think lifting trophies other people don't have is pretty cool.
So we're getting down to the wire of the season. We have this tournament. He touched on, you know, resting some of the veteran players possibly. As you hit these latter months, would you say that there's 3 or 4 top tier players that are playing for contracts on this team?
Without a doubt. I mean, I don't shy away from those things. I've been honest with those players. I've had the conversations with their representation, if they have it, or with them as individuals. And, you know, at this point, I would say that it's unproven what we need to do as a club. It's there is no clarity, even though we're only 6 points out of first place, and even though we still have 10 games to determine our own fate. The clarity is not there to make a decision right now on behalf of the future of the organization. There are some big decisions to make for the organization. Ultimately, I own those decisions. I don't shy away from them, and I don't shy away from the conversations about them. So we've got 2 or 3 guys that that are still earning the next opportunity, if they earn the next opportunity. And we've got 1 or 2 that... even though they're under contract, they've got to perform, or I've got to make a tough decision on where they'll be next year.
Steve, I have a quick question for everyone here. So first of all, as a former player, what is it like having those conversations now, being in the GM seat? And for you guys,
that's a great,
for you guys, how did you, in what way did that conversation make you respect what your GM was telling you?
Well, I do want to hear from Craig, because Craig's been on both sides of it now, really. My GM was Adrian when I played. So I came in, mine was a bit different from college, on a generation Adidas contract back then. It was a 3 guaranteed, I think, plus 2 option years. So I knew I had 5 years, really, to buy myself some time. After year 2, I think I was like, okay, I've outplayed this contract. And then I found out very quickly that in MLS, you don't renegotiate often, and I was stuck. So I was like, okay, it doesn't matter how well I'm doing, Adrian's not going to change. And he told me that. So it is what it is. You know, wait till the contract runs out, and then obviously my career went the way it went. But I didn't have many of those because I was pretty secured coming out of college. It was a long-term deal. And I can't remember how you came out or what it was for your situation, Brad, but I never had to go into Adrian or Ziggy's office too often for that.
Yeah, I never really had to. I was just was the guy that played out my contract. I was never making enough money where they had to be like, okay, they got to offload this guy. There was no reason. And I never caused a fuss either, so I was never that guy. I was the easy, just, you know, he's going to work hard. I'm playing for peanuts, and don't make me move to Houston, please.
I got personal. I got that phone call. I was a role player my entire career, so I understood by my second season in MLS, of which I played 10, I understood that my career was going to be a test of longevity, not of monetary status. So I never had an agent. I represented myself. Part of that interest in my world was, you know, I was the type of person that I didn't mind criticism. I didn't mind hearing what the coach and the GM and the club actually thought. So I would, I didn't ever think that the financial value placed on me, especially when we played in MLS. I mean, heck, you know, we weren't talking life-changing money. So, you know, it wasn't that hard. It was like, do you still want me here or not? Because the money, like, you know. So I was able to represent myself, and in doing that, what I learned really quickly was the people I respected the most were those that told me the truth, good, bad, or indifferent.
Yeah, that makes sense.
In the moment, it didn't always feel good to hear the truth because I was a role player and I was not the most talented guy on any team I played on. I was a key component of it, but not the only component or the most important. As you know, as Brad kind of says, like you play for peanuts, but you do it because your longevity it supersedes the financial piece of it. And so when I have those conversations now, what I try and focus on is just the truth. And you know, and I've learned over the years, I've tried to sugarcoat it, I've tried to soften it, I've tried to connect, I've tried to help. Sometimes honesty takes years to respect.
Yeah.
But the one thing that drives me in the conversations that I have with these guys and with the representation is that at some point in their life, I hope they can at least look at it and go, he told me his truth.
Yeah.
And that's what mattered the most. And whether or not that's exactly what I want to have to say out loud or what they need to hear or want to hear, one thing I think we'll all agree on at this table is that no one wants the end to come. No. Because it's the best job in the world to play. Yeah. And so, you know, facing the reality of a final conversation is really, really tough. Facing the reality of a final conversation at one club is difficult. Mm-hmm. It's not really tough if you know you're going to keep playing somewhere else.
Yeah.
It's just difficult. The tough conversation is the one when the club and the player don't agree on whether or not there's a future to be had on the field. And so that's the most difficult part, but I try to focus on the facts at this point because I think ultimately in the end, a player will wake up, whether it's 2 weeks, 2 years, 20 years later, at least they'll know I looked him in the eye and told him my version of the truth, which I'm hired. And by definition, I have to make decisions and have a version.
Yeah, no, great point. And to touch on something you just said there, we agree, you know, best job in the world. You know, you kind of realize it after, you know, you wake up, you go, you play football for a bit, then you go home. It's crazy. But you've done that. You've dabbled in coaching. Now, front office side, you've kind of worn all the roles here. I'm not going to ask which one you enjoy the most. I'm not going to ask that. I think we know the answer to that. But even with the high pressure of being at a club like the Sounders, making big decisions, you know, things like that that affect the direction of this club, do you find the time to just enjoy what you do? I mean, we do the radio call and you're usually in the booth over, so you're right next to us watching the game as well. So you can kind of watch it as a fan, but this is your job as well. But do you find the time to just enjoy sort of the process? Or is when you're in the weeds during the season and you're making trades and there's games to win and points on the line, is it hard to keep the enjoyment of it?
There are days, yeah. I mean, I'd say it's 80-20. Okay. You know, most of the time I get to enjoy it, and I get to enjoy it for all the reasons that we're talking about. I mean, you know, there's potential's a fun conversation.
Yes.
Right? And we're talking about potential of this group even now with 10 games left. So it's not defined. And I think that's the fun part of the job, is always talking about how can you make it better and how do we make it better? And, oh, you know, in the current world, you know, Billy's mom got him a bike for Christmas. Where's my bike? I want a bike. And why isn't it as nice as his bike? And, you know, those are all the theoretical conversations that are quite fun to put the puzzle together. When it's difficult, that 20%, you know, it's the reality of the job.
Yeah.
It's dealing with the salary cap and the players and the humans. You know, I'm just because of the seat I sit in doesn't mean I like having tough conversations or I enjoy having tough conversations. It's part of the responsibility, but I love what I do. I really do. I love the interactions with the fans. I love the pressure from the fans. I think it's healthy pressure. I always talk in jobs, like, do you have healthy pressure, unhealthy pressure? I'd say in Seattle, this seat has a lot of healthy pressure.
Yeah.
I work for a really, really fantastic ownership group that's willing to support this team and what it takes to be successful. And that's evolutionary. We're seeing exponential spend right now by one particular club in our league. It's not matched throughout the league, but it's drawn all the attention justifiably. You know, does that mean Miami becomes a championship team? I mean, hey, only the future can tell us that. But if the Sounders have anything to say about it, the answer to that question is no.
I have one more for you because I want to
understand this. For me, you know, there's a, in MLS for sure, there's a before Beckham and after Beckham. I think if we're all honest, that is just a fact of it. And I was not in the league before him. I've heard about everything from the meals, the hotel, the travel. I came in when we stayed in nice hotels. Travel was nice for me at the
You're
time.
You're welcome.
I liked it, right? So you guys paved the way for us. So he did a lot. One of the things that made him successful was he also performed on the pitch. You know, he ended up, I think, winning 2 or 3 championships. He was always available. He would fly, you know, private jet to England to play for the national team, then fly back for the weekend to play. Like, he was dedicated, right? He was a guy who, yes, a big name, but he put the work in, and all his teammates speak highly of, no, this guy actually put the work in. He changed the league. Messi, for me, is 50 times bigger than David Beckham. Messi is, I've never seen this before. This is the biggest player in the history of football, possibly, who's now playing in our league in MLS, which is still crazy to think about him being an MLS player. Are we gonna have to wait years and years, like we did with David Beckham, to see what he actually changed? Or would there be maybe some real-time things that are going to change now because it's Messi?
It's already changed.
Yes.
I mean, let's be fair. When David came to the league, he changed the league overnight.
Yeah.
When Messi's come to the league, he changed the league before he got here. So to your point, it's already a different impact.
Yeah.
You know, what Beckham did for our league, it's hard to quantify.
Yes, yeah.
But in reality, for those of us that played at Arrowhead Stadium in front of 3,000, 4,000 people and, you know, San Jose Stadium against the concrete walls and, you know, all these different factors that when he came here, the standard of what was presented to the players and the standard of what was presented to the fans changed. I think now we're in a world where, you know, Messi coming to the league it's astronomical. I mean, I think it's impossible to even try to predict what this could mean to MLS. And I think could is the word that has to be used because there's a million ideas on what this could do, what it will do, what it's already done for me personally, and I live on the opposite corner of the country, is fans are literally walking up to me going, when are we getting the next, when are we getting our Messi? When are we getting Messi? I say, well, there's only one of them, you know? And it turns out he signed in Miami. Yeah. And it's just a phenomenal thought process to think that these are the conversations that we get to have. Amazing. You know, when we played, it wasn't about Messi. It was just about David Beckham coming to our league and having the courage to come to our league, having the courage to speak highly about our league. Mm-hmm. And even then, looking in the press and on the radio and in the media and seeing the criticism he was getting from his compatriots about the comments and the respect he had for MLS.
Yeah.
It's an earth-shattering difference to where we are now, where, you know, you have one of the other most popular players in the world going out of his way to find a media outlet to take a shot at our league because...
Yeah.
It's been legitimized, and it's been legitimized without without certain people, but certainly with Messi.
Yeah.
And, you know, we as a league need him to come in. To your point about David, he came here and he rocked our league.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a short transition time where it took him a little while in terms of the chaos of the game and the athleticism and the pace that we kind of go 90 minutes flat out in America. But he played. And he won, and that was big. And we need Messi to be Messi. I don't think it's going to be hard for Messi to be Messi because he's never been anything else than unbelievable. but we need it. And, you know, we need it in Seattle. We need him to do really well unless we play him in a championship game. And then we need him to take that day off.
It always takes someone to kind of buck the trend. And David did that, right? He had a direct line to Don saying,
absolutely.
If I'm coming, then I'm going to tell you what this needs to be. I'm not staying at that hotel. I can tell you that. And if you make me stay in that hotel, I'm going to destroy you in every news outlet anywhere that I can.
Yeah.
And then you have a Messi who comes in and now will set the standard for what's expected to be a top level league in the world. He'll have that direct line to say, hey, no, this has to change. Yeah. Otherwise, if it doesn't, then you're going to hear criticism. And I mean, Inter Miami's, I mean, their Instagram is already at like 10.5 million followers
crazy.
Just overnight from him just one tweet, right? And it just shows you the eyeballs that are now on this league. And it's up to that team. They're going to have to build like the Galaxy did, because they were crap in 2007 when he came in, because, I mean, they were terrible. But it took them a bit. And so I think the same thing will happen with Inter Miami. They're obviously better comparatively than the Galaxy were, but I still think that they'll struggle a bit until they finally get their roster
probably next season
set, we'll see the right best, next season mid-season next year they should be flying,
he has a little bit, Messi gets a little bit of a cheat code because David's a part owner,
right?
And even though it's a different era of the league per se, like he has this knowledgeable friend and outlet to ask. I mean, you know, you add that little bit of a cheat code on top of the fact that Messi by himself is a cheat code. You know, is just, you know, in terms of like video game talk, like that's you don't need 10 other players in a video game, you just take him. It's fascinating, it's an awesome time, it's an awesome thing for our league. It's I'm stoked that he's here. I'm jealous. I can't answer every question the fans have, because I legitimately believe in my heart of hearts there is one Messi. And so when the fans ask me when we're getting ours, I, again, going back to the honesty thing, my answer is we're not, because there's only one of him. But look, we're here, now the pressure's on, you know, this is healthy pressure. Okay.
The race has started.
What are we going to do now to combat this? And what are we going to do now to make sure that we're better than that team? And what are we going to do to make sure we're better than LAFC? And how are we going to be better than the Galaxy consistently? And, you know, these are narratives and conversations that I play in the pool every day on, but they're also conversations that are real and they need to take place. I mean, sport is fun. In my opinion, sport is fun because it's entertainment, and entertainment evokes emotion and opinion. And if you are afraid of those things, then you quit jobs. You know, I'm not afraid of emotion and opinion. I love emotion and opinion. And I mean, to the fact when I see you guys at the stadium some days before the game, I'm like, what do you guys think? Feedback's good, right? Yeah, like I'm asking you guys, is this guy fulfilling what I think he's supposed to, you know? And I know you guys have conversations with Brian all the time too. You know, it's not a good business to be in if you're fearful.
Love it, Craig. Honestly, love how open and honest you are. We appreciate it. I think the fans will get a lot out of this. It's an exciting time to be an MLS fan, exciting to be a Sounders fan. Next up is Leagues Cup, and we hopefully can close out the next 10 games well. And then you have a busy offseason. I don't envy your position or Brian's position, but it comes with a job. So we appreciate you joining the podcast. Welcome back on anytime. Thanks for being on, man.
I appreciate it, guys. Anytime.